Okay, so without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Sal. Let's give him a round.
Thank you guys for being here. I'm Sal. I'm an alcoholic. You know, I want to thank Marcus for inviting me to speak. He's not here today because he's sick, but you know, I have that cute little story that Patrick has with Marcus. Mine's a little different. Me and Marcus met sometime last year, and he had the coffee commitment, and he was in his truck, and the secretary opened up the door, and he must have looked down to lock his car or something. I was already in the building making the coffee, and then the coffee was already all done, like within minutes, and we sat across the table, like it seemed like an hour, but it was only like 30 seconds, and I thought he was gonna beat me up, and you know, Marcus and. We looked at each other for 30 seconds. I'm gonna have to fight this guy, and here, and because I took over his commitment, you know. And I always get to meetings early, and we looked at each other. And Marcus got up. He's like, "Come here," and he gave me a big old Marcus hug, and we've been friends ever since. My sober date is June 20th, 2018, and my sponsor is Nate D, and my home group is Goes to Any Length group. Men's Stag at 6:30, and I'm going to start off on telling you guys how it was. And, it's going to be interesting. This is like my first time speaking ever. You know, my mind, I always thought, like, can I just stand here? Can I just stand here? You guys know that this program works, because I got 5.5 years. And then I thought in my mind too, like, can we get like Morgan Freeman to come and narrate for me, or like even better yet, we could have Billy come and narrate for me. But that's not what we do here. You know, I have to give back what's pretty given to me, and you know, the I'll get there. But you know, my childhood was great. I was raised by my great grandma from newborn all the way to 15 years old, and I was sheltered. Couldn't do very much. Couldn't play any sports, because she was afraid that I was going to get hurt. I have a twin brother, and I refrain to him as my anonymous twin brother, because he has more years in his fellowship, and I'm going to talk about him too. But you know, me and my twin brother, we were raised by my great grandma, and we were raised really clean. We were poor, but we had a clean home, nice clothes. She showed me everything. She showed me everything up until she died when I was 15 years old. And when she died, I believe God took my best friend from me. You know, my grandma was everything to me. And that's when everything changed for me. I didn't know what was going on. You know, this lady showed me how to cook, clean, wipe my butt, do everything. And once she was gone, it was like, poof. You know, not knowing that years later down the line that you know, she died of natural causes. She lived a full life. You know, once she died, I was attracted to gangs. You know, gangs are part of my story. You know, my first job was a paper boy, and I had a paper route, and I did three blocks in my neighborhood, and I knew the older guys in my neighborhood. You know, this guy sold weed, this guy drank, this guy sold other stuff, and this guy did this. And so I was attracted to those older men. You know, I was 15 years old, and these men were like in their 30s, 35, and I became real good friends with them. One of those friends that I drank with for the very first time, he's still my friend today. I called him today and checked on him. He's not doing so good in his life, but, you know, I can't make him come here. I invited him, but we're still friends today. And you know, the first time I drank was 15 years old with my friend, and you know, I drank one of those 24-ounce Budweiser. And you know, being 15 years old and hanging around with these older guys, it was like a privilege. It was like these guys are taking in this little kid. You know, nowadays you get in trouble for doing that stuff, I think, you know. And for a long time, maybe a year or 2 years, I didn't have a problem. I'd drink that tall boy, watch the Raider game, you know, football. And that's all I would drink was probably a tall boy because I was little and I didn't know what I was doing, but I was able to maintain. And then other stuff came in. Years later, there was other substances. I am an addict, and alcohol is a drug for me. I'm easily addicted to those chocolates back there that someone brought. And I'm already counting them. You know, I already had three, and I could maybe get three more before I leave tonight. But talking about my twin brother, he was supposed to be here today, but he texted me on Wednesday. He said, "I'm not going to come out for your first speaker meeting because I want you to be relaxed, and I don't want you to feel pressure or any criticism coming from me." And I texted him back crying. I was at the gym on the treadmill. I was like, talk to text, and I was crying. I was like, "Thank you. You've been a big part of my recovery. You're the reason why I was attracted to you being sober." And he's been a big reason why this time I stuck around. I remember when he got sober, I think 9 years ago, I went with him to his first meetings, and I wasn't drinking at that time. And I would just go to support him, and then I didn't stick around. I didn't think I needed these rooms. And back when I always refrained to, like, when I was 15 years old, like, when I was two, this happened. When I was two, this happened. But a lot of things happened when I was 15 years old. The first time I came to this room was in 1996 when I was 15 years old, right when my grandma died. I got in trouble for something, and I got that court card, and I came once, they said keep coming back, and someone told me, or I heard, or someone said, "Well, if you're not ready, figure out a way where you're not going to get," well, I translated as, "I'm not going to get in trouble again. I'm not going to get busted. I'm not going to do those things I did to get me here the first time back in 1996. And I got that court card, and I think I said, "F this, I'd rather do the time." And I did something, and I don't know, I didn't get that court card the rest of the signatures. I wish I would have, but all I heard was, like, I didn't even hear nothing. I just was feeling like, how am I going to get out of this hour meeting? And I never came back until I came with my brother when he surrendered. And things have happened to me before that 15 years old thing. I share my story. I was molested by my step aunt. I was probably 13 years old. And the reason why I share it with you guys is because I had fears of, because I think when it happened, there was a cat around, or there was a neighbor's cat, and I had fears of cats, the reason why I'm saying it is because I'd done my steps, and I did my inventory on why I hated cats, but the whole reason why I hated cats was because I hated what my aunt did to me. And I share it in a group like this, not for you guys to feel sorry for me, like I said, but knowing that being able to work on these steps and figure out why something was bothering me, it happened to me. And the thing is that it happened to me, but I had no control of it. And I'll get to that later. There's a lot of things I did to myself that I had control of, and I worked the steps, and I'm a better man today. So what happened? And I'm going to continue. This is my first time speaking, so I'm going to continue what happened. After 15 years old, I reached my 20s, I reached my 30s, and I was still drinking and using and drinking. And I, for the longest time, once I was attracted to those gangs, I figured, like, hey, it'll be great to do life in prison. And doing life in prison is a big commitment. I thought, we recently had a member go to away for a little while, and I was talking to him a while back when I met him. I go, "Hey, I had a small business thought, like, you do the crime, I'll do the time." And the thing is, where I lived in my bathroom for years, knowing that that's how the jail cell is. I have a lot of friends in prison that are doing life that are never going to be able to get home. One of those guys that is in prison, he said, we're not accepting applications in here. So don't think you're gonna come in here being somebody you're not. So my best advice to you is to stay out. So I took his suggestion. Even though, you know, I wanted to kill somebody to get there, or, you know, the politics in the streets, you know, I wouldn't have hurt any of you normal people, but someone that deserved to be their life taken, I would have done it. I would have done it knowing that I did something for the cause or for the street life, or for the politics in the streets. I would have easily done it, and not thinking of the consequences. Now, you know, I view life very, very precious. There's a movie, and I think it's Shawshank Redemption is one of my favorite movies, and it's like get busy living or get busy dying, and I get busy living every day. Once this hard-headed alcoholic or addict, or even without the drugs and alcohol, you know, I would black out, go numb, and wouldn't really care about anything, and nevertheless care about myself. So, you know, I would go on these blackouts, and alcohol would just, you know, fuel that fire. It would just fuel it. And, you know, I never really did anything dumb. You know, I was talking to another member about my steps, and he's a new guy. He only has less than a year. Oh, he barely got a year. And I feel like all these new guys that came in with the year, like, I feel like new because this last year I've been doing my steps, so I'm right hand in hand with those guys. And I was talking to one of the members, and, you know, I really didn't hurt nobody except myself. I hurt my family, and my brother and my niece and nephew, and you know, I've been able to make amends to them. But you know, the first 4 years, like I said, I didn't do any steps. I came to a lot of meetings. And I came to a lot of meetings in both fellowships before COVID. Someone said replace the N with an A and A with an N. Just get to a meeting, whatever it takes. You know, and I call this AA. I call it the Living Right program because it showed me how to live right. I think there's a lot of people that should do these 12 steps. And you know, I read the 12 steps for many years off the wall. You know, I would come, hear people's stories, hear people share, and say, like, I'm different. There's something about me different. Or, you know, I was scared. I heard people say the fourth step is the hardest one to do. So in my mind, I thought, well, how about I don't do any of the steps? You know, it worked for a while. It worked for 4 years. But you know, one thing about my twin brother. He's been my cheerleader. He's been my offense, defense. He's been the referee. He's been a lot of things on my team, and I would go to him with the same problem for the 10th time. And one day we were driving back. I forgot where we went. We were in LA, and we were coming back, and I was telling him about the same problem for the 10th time. And my sister-in-law, she's a normie. She's like, Sal, what step are you on? I was like, ooh, that's a burn, you know. You know, my sister-in-law, like if you mess with me, you'll get it from her. But when I'm in the wrong, I get it from her, and I get that from my family too. You know, so that's what got me thinking of doing the step. And you know, there's that movie in Boys in the Hood where the guys are robbing the Chinese store, and the guy goes, I feel sorry for your mama. Well, you know, I play that in my head, and I go, I feel sorry for your sponsor, talking about me. And I feel bad for my sponsor sometimes. But, you know, I feel like for the first 4 years, I tell people I had to sober up the first 4 years. You know, I had to detox for the first 4 years. And being able to do these steps, I know some of you guys haven't finished your steps here, but I'm not counting or making inventory on that. But, you know, being able to do these steps and be like, I done one, I'm on an 11th step now. And, you know, when Marcus asked me to speak, I was like, he asked me 5 times to speak throughout this whole year. And the first time, I'm not ready. I need to finish my steps. I'll tell you when I'm ready. And he's okay. And he asked me again, and I'm not ready. And then he asked me a while back, and he's like, ask your sponsor if you're ready. And I'm like, okay, I'll ask him. And then I wasn't ready. So this time, you know, last month when he asked me, I was on the phone with my twin brother that he invited me to speak in March. I'm going to be his 10-minute, and then he's going to be the 40-minute or whatnot. But, you know, right when I was on the phone with my twin brother, Marcus called again. Now, Marcus only calls when he needs me to speak. So I knew, like, what is that? You know, that has to be my higher power telling me something. So and then once I hung up on my brother, I called Marcus back, and he goes, I need you to speak. And then he goes, call your people, call whatever, call, do whatever you need to do. So I called my sponsor, and the first thing I told him was, Marcus wants me to speak, and I'm ready. I didn't ask him, and then I got the blessing, and here I am today speaking. And like I said, the first 4 years, I didn't do nothing. I went to a lot of meetings, but in those 4 years during COVID, I moved to Oklahoma, and I was in Oklahoma for a year. I'm living on this ranch, still sober, and there was no recovery, no meetings. I would get up and go on the meeting finder, try to find meetings. There was a sign, like the old sign of NAAA. It was on the meter finder, but they weren't active. And then one day, they have, like, in Oklahoma, it was a small little city in, like, Guadalupe, and they have, like, five or six. I was living by, like, a big casino, but in that city, they have, like, five or six alcohol stores, like BevMo, but just pure alcohol. And I went up to the lady, and I'm like, do you guys have any AA meetings around there? And she goes, oh my gosh, you're the first person in my history that ever asked that question. And she, you know what happened that day? She led me to Celebrate Recovery, so I did get some recovery. She's like, that's the very first time anybody's coming here asking those questions. I just felt like, oh my gosh. And so I came back home. You know, I still didn't do steps, and like I told you, this last year, it's been a game changer. You know, the story about me wanting to do life in prison. Last month, I applied for H&I. So H&I is hospitals and institutions, and I got approved to do the North County Jail. I go once a week, and you know, I get to go to jail. You know, I get to go to jail. And I get to come out an hour later, free with no charges, you know. And the funny thing is, we got orientation, and right when we got there, we went into this pod, and part of the orientation is like you don't say hi to the inmates, and you don't do this with the inmates, and you don't do this with the inmates. So we walk in as a group, my orientation group, and the sheriff's staff, and right away, Sal, what are you doing here, Sal? Like, I could hear the whole pod calling my name, and it's like, oh my gosh, and I think I turned red. And then the first time that we went in there, our escort was a sheriff's officer, and I knew him too. So, you know, I put my mom through a lot of stuff. Towards the end, I was cussing her out and cussing out my dad. You know, since I was born, we never locked our doors at our house. They're open right now if you were to go by. But now they're open. But you know, five years ago, there's someone always home. That's why it's always open. But you know, my mom's house, they started locking their doors because of me. They put the screen doors on both. They put bars on the windows, and for some reason, they did all that, and I still was able to get in. And they were like, they were like, wow, well, and I have a reminder right here. It's my keys. You know, I carry them around. These keys right here is because if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't have the keys to my mom's car. I would have the key to my dad's truck. I wouldn't have keys to my own home. You know, this is a reminder right here, these keys right here, because I could go in the middle of the night, start my dad's truck up and take off, and he wouldn't question me because he knows that I'm sober and I'm working a program. I've been able to make amends to a lot of people, my mom, my dad, my twin brother. And my twin brother, you know, he has 9 years in this. And when I was starting to do my steps, I was like, okay, I'm going to get to step 9, and I will mention my brother. But before I started doing that, I talked to another member. Well, I think my brother's never made an amends to me. And he's been a living amends. But, you know, when I got to this house, I'm like, hey, I need to talk to you. I'm a step 9, I want to make that amends. And he's okay. So he was already like already something, like I could tell stuff because he wanted to get it done. He's like, you ready? And I'm like, I'm ready. So we went in the kitchen. I made my amends. And he's like, hold on, Sal. And I was like, I thought, you know, I after that part where he says, what can I do to make it right? He's like, you're doing everything right. But he caught me. He's like, hold on. He's like, I owe you amends, a formal amends. So he made that amends. And that was like very, very different. You know, after we talked, and we talked for an hour, and he explained it in some kind of way that if he would have made amends maybe a long time ago when he got sober, I would have never comprehended what amends meant, and he would have wasted his energy to make those amends. Now that I'm getting this program, he made amends to me, and I get it. I get it. There's a lot of people, my nieces. I talked to my oldest goddaughter today. I don't have any kids of my own, but my twin brother's daughters are like my daughters. And I called one today, and she's in UCLA. And, you know, she's been there. When I told you guys, like I wanted to kill somebody, and one of those persons was myself. I didn't care if I died. I wanted to die. You know, and I talked to my goddaughter earlier, and I said, well, do you have any advice for me? And she's like, no, just be yourself and take a deep breath. And that's what I'm doing here. But, you know, I talk about wanting to kill myself. You know, 5 years ago, before I surrendered to this program, you know, I was suicidal. And, you know, I got really, really close. I would play with that ball of fire, play with it, and just let it go. You know, the 25 years that I was drinking, you know, I would be able to do it on my own. I would drink for a while, 3 years, and then sober up for a year. Drink for 5 more years and sober up for a year. And I hit a lot of bottoms. And, you know, knowing that I was going to do a speaker meeting, I stopped listening to speaker meetings on YouTube for a week. You know, I turned it off because I didn't want to repeat what I hear from all the speaker meetings. Even though we do a lot of repetition and copying off each other because this program works and we know it. You know, I turned off the YouTube for a week, and then after I turned it back on, and I put like, how do I become a motivated speaker? And how do I become a speaker where people want to listen to me? And then I started doing that, but then I had to turn it off. I turned it off. And you know, and then what helped me too was you know, I always have a higher power. You know, my great grandma taught me. I was Catholic. I was an altar boy. I always had faith. I had her faith more. When she died, I think I threw away my faith too with a lot of other stuff. And this program has been able to show me what my higher power really is. You know, I was talking to another member a month ago, I think, and I said, you know, we talk about God 3 or 4 times, but when it comes to the meetings, I don't hear God at all. And then we talked about it. But I did a Zoom meeting a week ago, and they talked about how they did it in the 40s, and I heard something really special. It's like we'll show you all the ways to be here, but we find our higher power on our own, and that's what really clicked in me. You know, I've been able to get closer to God, my God. I've been able to talk to others after the meeting, before meetings, about my God, my higher power. And you know, I am really, really close to my higher power. I got recently the blessing to start sponsoring people for my sponsor. And I who would have ever known that you know, for the longest time, I'm just here to listen. I'm here for myself. I'm here the first 4 years. I was here just to do me. And now that, you know, I have a sponsor. I remember last year, my sponsor right away, hey, I think you'll be great doing the publicity thing. And I'm like, wait, I'm only here to commit to you that I'll finish these steps. He's like, no, I'll just pencil you in. So knowing that a pencil could get erased was okay. I'll do it. We could erase that pencil later. And I've been doing a good job on my commitment. Commitments are really really helpful because I get to the meetings an hour. I mean, maybe sometimes an hour, a half an hour early. Just like I stepped on Marcus's toes. I'm making the coffee. I helped Anthony make coffee a lot of times, and it's helped me. And then leading to that commitment that my sponsor penciled me in, this month and next month, I get to be the leader in our Orca speaker meeting. And that wouldn't happen if I wouldn't have took suggestion from my sponsor saying that I have a commitment for you, and I accepted. What I do to stay sober today is I go to a lot of meetings still, and my sponsor suggested, why don't you reach out to the newcomer? In my head, I was like, how in the heck am I going to be able to help the newcomer? And most of the times, I don't know if I'm helping the newcomer, but I know it really helps me. I've done the steps, I did the steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like chicken scratch. My penmanship, if I was to go back and read it, I couldn't even read it. So when I did 9, it was still chicken scratch, and my sponsor looked at it, and then I redid them all. Like my amends was, sorry for drinking and using all this time. I'm sorry. And the next person, I'm sorry. And then I got an example. My amends are about a half a page long now, and my penmanship has gotten a lot better. So when my sponsor reads it, and I read it later on, or I read it to that person I'm making the amends to, I know exactly what I'm saying. And I'm just really, really, really grateful that I get to be this person I am today. This is the only program, I got into the gangs a little bit. I could get into way more of the gangs. I always wanted a brothership, a fellowship. I don't like to say it a lot, too many, but there's some homies here today, and we found a better way to live. My awe was becoming a gang member in prison, and to a different standard that comes with the Mexican mafia, and I don't know how I'd have been able to have been used in there or do favors for them or do things for them, but that's everything I wanted was to be a prison gang member. And if I would have got killed a year in or 5 years in, then that was my destiny. But now I found a gang, and you guys are my gang. I get called homie or dumb by once I started identifying as a gang member, everybody would call me like, hey, what's up, dog, or what's up, what's up, homie, and for the my dating career hasn't been that great. They say you shouldn't get into a relationship the first year. My suggestion is you shouldn't get into relationship until you finish your 12 steps. I befriended this girl, and she goes, oh my gosh, you look like a homie. And it's like, oh my gosh, if I was to wear a cowboy outfit, I'm still gonna look like that homie. You can't take that away. So nothing happened. I don't think I'm friends with her no more. But it's funny because I want for myself, I want a relationship. I want to be with somebody. And once my grandma died, I don't have no kids of my own. A girlfriend really never mattered to me. I didn't want a girlfriend. I didn't want someone to tell me what to do at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I didn't want someone to tell me what to do at 3 o'clock at night. I didn't want no responsibilities. If I was to go to prison, I didn't want no one to cry for me. And the thing is that once I dedicated myself to that lifestyle, it's a real, real hard lifestyle to get out of. I was hard-headed. I I didn't want another man to run my life. And that's where the sponsorship comes in. I'm probably going to repeat myself. Being a gang member, I don't want the judge to tell me what to do. I don't want another man in the street to tell me what to do. I do what I want to do for my own self. And if I do good, if I do bad, if I get myself in any situations, I knew how to get myself out. I remember when I was doing stupid things. I took out my cart. I took out all the other seats in my car because people would, can you give me a ride real quick over here? Can you do this real quick? I can't take you anywhere. I want to do things that I want to do. If I committed a crime, that crime was going to be done by me, because I realized too, like, you know, I'm not going to go to prison and you know, one of my charges was when I was 15 years old, again, I got possession of a firearm, and I was with my cousin, and that firearm was mine, but I didn't get caught with it. But at the end of those charges, getting pulled over a block away from where we're supposed to go, I took all those charges. I took all the blame. My car got impounded, the gun got taken away. Thank God it did. Being able to take direction from my sponsor, another man, you men in this room, in this fellowship, has been a game changer. I take suggestions from anybody, even the women here. You know, if I was a woman, I would have Kathy be my sponsor. She's been a really good cheerleader of mine. When I got to my home group a year ago, you know, I thought, I'm a gangster, and none of these people know what I'm going through. And once I heard Kathy's story, it was like, she has the same story as me. She's a girl, I'm a guy, and I was like, I'm right at home. So, taking suggestions from other men and other people, knowing that they have the best interest in me, that I could call my sponsor brothers, I could call other men in these rooms by phone. I gave him my phone today, and gave it to Raul, because I want to be free from my phone. I still suffer from that addiction to be on my phone. My favorite suggestion to a speaker is if you get caught up to what you're going to speak about, mention me. So two speakers already mentioned me in their talk, but you know, how do I give the advice to myself? And you know, I'm getting a little bit of lost of words, but I became close lately. I became close to Raul. Really, really close to Drew back there. Raul's been I'm taking recovery seriously, and I'm taking my health seriously. You know, before I would want to figure out how to pass a drug test, and now I want to pass the blood panel test with no high cholesterol, no diabetes, none of that. So, you know, last year I had a little bit of high cholesterol and a little bit of pre-diabetes, and I asked my doctor, you know, what do I do? He's like, oh, it's everything that you're eating. So I got stubborn, and I go, you know what? For the month before I gave my next blood test, I ate cereal for a month, and I'm gonna show this doctor, you know, that I could do it. So the blood test came back, and he's like, you're doing great, Salvador. Everything's went lower and lower. So you know, I refer to Raul because I prayed about somebody helping me in my, if you see my stories on Facebook and Instagram, I do a lot of, I've been getting busy on working out. I was real lazy in my recovery, and I was real lazy in my health and my fitness. And I prayed about it. I didn't know that, you know, Raul was going to jump up in front and take me on. You know, I remember the first day we went to the gym, he was like, you got to do this and keep your arms like this. And my, I was like, I'm always a day late and a dollar short. I'll tell you what happened in yesterday's meeting. But you know, I gave up my cell phone today, trying to be present. I learned that, you know, just to be here today, I gotten better with my fitness. I feel healthier. I went on a hike yesterday, in the pouring rain. And I remember I tried to do the hike 5 years ago. I think it took me like 3 hours. And yesterday in the pouring rain, it took me 45 minutes to get to the top of Avila. And, I wouldn't have done these things sober. I wouldn't have, we have a lot of stories. There's a lot of stories in this book. And I get to live every day. I get to live every day sober, knowing that my grandma's watching down on me. And not only watching down on me, she's watching down on my twin brother too, knowing that we found our way in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the only, I'm a really, really, really bad reader. And this girl I heard at a meeting say, if you don't know how to read the book, go on YouTube and YouTube will read it. And I was already on YouTube for like a year watching other shows. So I typed in big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been able to read along reading this book. And then when my sponsor gives me homework to do, and my sponsor's been great, he's read the book with me, and I've become a better reader. For a month, someone had me reading the 12 traditions. I go to a lot of meetings. On Monday, I'll do like 3 meetings a day. On Tuesday, I do H&I. Wednesday, I'll go to Pathways. And then Thursday, we have the men's bag. And then Fridays, I take off. And then Saturdays, depending on what I do during the weekend, I'll go to a meeting, ending the weekend here at this meeting. But I do a lot. And, this program really, really works. Being able to do the steps really, really works. My favorite part in the book is there's no newcomers here today. But there's a lot of guys that I know that haven't finished their steps. And and just imagine how powerful you'll be when you do those steps. So the other day I was at the factory meeting, and one of the leaders said, what's your favorite part in the book? Well, my favorite part in the book is always changing, because I read new things, and just like the Bible, it's a living book. Every time I could read the same thing 10 different times, 10 different ways, but every time I read it, it's going to be 10 different outcomes. And my favorite part in the book is into action. And it's on page 76. It says, remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length to victor over alcohol. And that's what I tell myself, and I tell a lot of new guys, is that if we use this program as we use alcohol, if I call my sponsor like I use alcohol, if I call you guys like I use alcohol, if I reach out to the new guy like I use alcohol, that this program is going to work, because I use alcohol a lot. One thing I didn't share was towards my end of my drinking career, just like they make alcohol in prison, I made it at home. And when I made it at home, it was really, 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 really strong stuff. And I made a big old bag of it, and it was as strong as, I think, vodka or tequila. I don't remember, but I remember it was really strong. And I remember towards the end of my drinking career, I started off with that tall boy. Towards the end, I was drinking teaspoons. We get the alcohol from Mexico, the 100 proof. And you can't drink a drink like you drink water. You gotta get a teaspoon and drink that, and that's harsh. So I'm glad that I don't live that life no more. I don't want to bore you. I hope I didn't bore you with my drunk a log and my drinking days. But everything I share with you guys today, as it's been a big part of my life. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a new way of thinking. This stubborn guy without the alcohol and drugs is really, really stubborn. And with the drugs and alcohol, it just gets worse. Now that I'm sober, Alcoholics Anonymous is giving me my life back. So thank you guys very much.